Welcome to Celebrity Entrepreneur with the incredible James Maslow. I'm David Meltzer, blessed to be here today. James, you are looking very warm. What's going on there in Nashville?
David, I am warm. I really am. It's 20 degrees outside and I was walking the dogs and I needed a jacket. And I'm not going to lie. I was in a session up until about 7 minutes before this podcast. So I was rushing, but I got them taken out. I got myself, you know, nice and bundled up, and I figured I would keep it on because I knew you'd appreciate the look.
Not only do I appreciate the look, what I really appreciate is the utilization of time. I have a question real quick before we bring on our mogul today, an incredible entrepreneur, one of my favorite entrepreneurs, and I would say one of the most unknown talents when it comes to speaking, and you'll see this in the interview. This guy blows doors off of most of the most famous guests that we have in speakers in the world, but were you conscious about the time utilization when you went and walked the dog, or was it just a matter of your being now?
Well, I was aware that I had a schedule to keep, right? And you've instilled a lot of this in me, and it's the only way in which I can be not only successful in doing multiple things, right? Wanting to have an acting career and a music career and be building a solo one within, I mean, plus real estate, plus investments, plus speaking, plus all the different things. It's the only way I can actually do all of them well, but more importantly, do them without being stressed. And so it's like communication, anything else. When I write it down in my schedule and I allot the time, I communicate not only with the people that I'm going to be in meetings or sessions with before and after, but with myself. And here's a good example of utilizing time like that to actually finish projects and get things done. I was literally in a session, as I mentioned before this, and because we knew we had 2 more hours, you know, 1 more hour, 45 minutes, there was a sense of urgency, not to rush and not to create something that's not good, but to finish the song, which otherwise we might have then, you know, second guessed. We might have taken more time. We might have taken a lunch break. And while all that's fine, it doesn't guarantee that the song would have been any better. In fact, we probably wouldn't have even ever finished it. So there was a little bit of pressure that I have learned to operate so well underneath. We finished a killer song. I allotted just enough time to go and take care of the business I knew I had to do. I was like waving bye as they're wrapping up in the studio, taking the dogs out because Caitlin did tell me, I'm leaving. Can you feed the dogs and walk the dog? So I knew that was on my plate. I'm just going to get it done. And what did I sacrifice? I sacrificed, you know, getting my lunch in earlier. Not a big deal. I can get it after this, right? Sacrifice going and putting on a different outfit instead of a hat and this jacket. But you know what? That turned out to be a great fashion choice, which we can all clearly see here. So I think it's utilizing your time and then taking the pressure of staying on that schedule as a good thing, as a motivating thing to finish projects and hit deadlines. I love it. It's just a part of me these days.
Well, speaking of a part of being an entrepreneur on the Celebrity Entrepreneur, I'm going to bring a celebrity on within his subject matter, topic, and expertise. He is our country's leader in steel. He's the man of steel and incredible insights. And I just love having conversations with him because it's rare that I'm learning so much when I'm talking to individuals. And this guy is a wealth of knowledge of life and business experience. Let's bring on the incredible Bobby Mesmer. Welcome to Celebrity Entrepreneur.
Good to see David, you, James, listen, I'm sitting here listening to you guys. I got 4 words for each of you. Happy wife, happy life. Okay. Yeah. So just remember that.
Yeah. Well, you're dumb enough to marry a lawyer. So, but that's okay. That makes it even harder to keep her happy.
I was trying for a sugar mama, man. That's where I was going. You know?
Right. You know, exactly. I've thought about that a lot too.
I have a sugar mama. She's my sugar and a great mama. So,
there you go.
Anyways.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's great to see you as both.
You too, man.
It's so good to have you. You know why I love you, Bobby? Your heart is so big. It's obvious, easy to love. But today I try to convince people about their essence, that there's a place for everyone if you're true to yourself. And there's, you know, experts in subject matter, in topics. There's no omniscient being other than, you know, for me, the faith that I have in God that is omniscient. I just got to figure out, you know, how to access all that knowledge or how to access all that power that God has given all of us. And so when in your career did you get a comfort level though to, because, you know, you're on stages, you're on interviews, you're mentoring people. And I've gotten to witness all of those. And you do it as good as anyone that's been doing it for 30 years, because you're confident and comfortable in who you are and the expertise that you hold, but also the ignorance that you have outside of the topics that you don't know anything about. How long did it take you to feel comfortable and confident, you know, to be public like that?
I think I've always been like out there, you know, like I've always put myself out there. And I think that for anybody, if you believe in yourself enough, other people will believe in you, you know? And I think it's also having an understanding of how you address a topic, whether you know about it or you don't. It took me, but even to this day, I say it all the time, like, you want to hear what I have to say? I still find that interesting that people actually want to hear what I have to say, that people find it interesting or find me interesting or what I do or just want to hear my expertise. I don't look at myself that way. I'm sitting here in my office here in Nashville and, you know, and I'm grinding away, you know, and, you know, it's like, oh, it's time to do this interview with Dave and James. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know, but here I am, I'm engineering stuff. So, I guess it takes a while. And I guess it's about just, you know, I think staying humble in it also helps because, again, like, I'm just me, I'm doing my thing. God has gifted me to be talented in what I do. And I think I want to just share that with the world. So I just go out there and I just say, at this point, I'm older now. So I'm like, I'm just doing this. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just going to do it. And look, you're going to have some naysayers that might not like what I have to say, but it's okay because I know that I can talk with the naysayers too. Actually, I appreciate the naysayers sometimes more than I appreciate the people who are agreeing with me because I learn a lot from that. I take a lot in from it and I absorb it and I'm like, okay, that's a perspective, man, that I never thought of. So it just takes a while, man. It really does. But I think it's a confidence thing, Dave. As you well know, James, you know too. I mean, you know, you guys do the same thing, and you got to have the confidence to know that, look, here's what I'm talking about. Here's what I'm putting out there. And I believe in what I'm saying, because if you don't believe in what you're saying, it's not going to come out the right way either.
For sure. I love you bringing up the naysayers too, because that's something that I often get asked by my fans or friends. How do you deal with the haters, the naysayers, the people that are just going to pick apart everything you have to say, attack you? And I love your perspective. I too try and look at it as, hey, what do you have to say? I'm going to be open-minded to it because it's very possible that there's something there I can learn. And or there might be an opportunity for me to educate. I mean, that's what a really good conversation and a really good debate actually should be. Let's both come to the table and educate each other if we're actually willing to listen to the other side and potentially come to an agreement, or at the very least go, hey, I respect your position. I respect your opinion. If I do respect it, if it comes from a place of experience, education, history, fact. And though I see now how you could see it that way, this is why I feel the other way. I think it is so beautiful. And to your point, I find those curiosities, to put it kindly, more intriguing, more thought-provoking, and with more potential for both sides to learn than just the people to go, hey, I love you, which is great. And I appreciate those well, people too.
You're right. I mean, it's like, I always talk a lot about reflection. You got to reflect, you know, every day, every month, all the time on everything that you're doing. And the naysayers create a bit of reflection. It causes you to stop and think for a second, you know, because you can't, if you're headstrong and thinking that your opinion is the only one, you've already lost the battle and the war, you know, so it's over. But to your point, like, I think the first key thing is being able to absorb what the naysayer is saying to you, being able to take it in. Most people can't. They can't take that criticism because either they're so self-important, and I'll say it that way. I don't know any other way to say it, but they're so self-important that they're so self-righteous that I am right no matter what. Or, you know, so that becomes a problem. And a lot of people just don't want to have a good educational debate to listen to both sides, you know? So like if you and I, James, were having a debate right now, I should be able to stop you and say, okay, hold on a second. But on that point, what about this? And yep. you should be able to say the same thing. And that's what creates constructive criticism, which is what we're all, well, basically what we're talking about. And if you don't have that criticism, how do you grow, right? How do you continue to move yourself forward and be better at anything that you're doing if you're not absorbing the criticism that people are allowed to take to reflect upon it and say, okay, I'm going to do this so I can be better through the process.
And inconstructive criticism is a great word that I use even with DEI now is appreciation, right? Constructive appreciation is even better than constructive criticism that, you know, just like in diversity, equity and inclusion, equity creates separation because we're not the same or you want someone to be the same, where diversity, appreciation and inclusion is much more cohesive and collaborative in what it is. Now let's talk about stepping on stages. You know, one of the things, you have accelerated your speaking career faster, than anyone that I've worked with. You know, I was like amazed in the first couple months. You're like, Dave, I just spoke here, paid speaking. Anybody can speak for free anywhere. It's fine. But like real professional speaking, and the feedback has been incredible. You are not the normal Tony Robbins. You don't look like Tony Robbins. You don't sound like Tony Robbins.
Better looking, that's why.
You may be as tall as Tony Robbins. But what is so interesting is that, you know, you have this ability, which made reality TV so valuable. You know, you have the Yale guys that did the duck hunting, you know, all of that. And reality TV, beyond NFL, which was the first reality TV sports, when you got into these like Persian housewives or the, you know, real estate, like all, it was really about being inside the perspective of what would it like to be, you know, this redneck Southern duck hunter, you know, and what is that life on the bayou like? And when you speak, there's so much great wisdom, but it's a perspective that isn't someone that came from Napoleon Hill and Wayne Dyer and Bob Proctor and, you know, that same lineage. It's someone that's saying, look, here's my journey. It's kind of like Penny the Roofer, you know, here's my journey. And I got these great lessons and I am who I am, but I think people enjoy it. My favorite interview of the whole Super Bowl was a cameo video that I took of Bobby talking to a young contractor architect. And I literally have taken notes. I transcribed it with AI because there was so many lessons, but it wasn't like intentional lessons. It was just like this killer steel contractor, architect, lawyer background, whatever the hell you were talking about. I'm like, shit, that's how that works. That's that street hustle. How come so many people want to just fit a round peg in a round hole when it comes to having someone step on stage and they haven't been able, you know, let me change the question. How do you communicate to the bigger stages? Like, I have some big lessons in a different perspective, which is much more entertaining than this vanilla same lessons and the same flavor every day.
Yeah, that's a good question, Dave. I think, you know, for a year, I went and I participated in a lot of speaking engagements, and a lot of it was exactly what you said. It was the free, you know, like either pay to play or not pay to play. But I watched everybody who I was speaking with, and everybody has the same thing. Like they're talking about the same thing. And one of the things that I've always kept true to myself is, I'm not the same as everybody. I don't want to be the same as everybody, and I'm going to do it different. That's what's made me successful in my business. So I wanted to put that into the speaking side of what I'm doing. And so I said, you know what? I'm not going to go up there with this script and tell the same story stage after stage after stage. My story of my life that is engaging is what people want to hear about, and my successes and my failures and all the heartache that I've had. But I tell it in my own way. I don't go up there with it scripted. I go up there with it more bullet pointed and you know, knowing what in my head, like what points I want to hit. And I also feel the crowd. What is engaging to them in that piece of time, and how do I shift it? So I think, you know, that's where I've gone with this. I think it's worked for me. It's, you know, and a lot of people have said, like, you know, it's interesting. You didn't script this. And I'm like, no, I didn't. I'm just telling my story. I lived my own life. I know how to tell my story. Right. So, and I think, you know, you talk about hooks, like, you know, like, oh, you want to hook everybody in the first few minutes. I feel like one of the things part of my story, no different than some of your story, Dave, is I have multiple hooks, you know, like once I talk about one part of my life and then I get to a certain point and I'm like, oh yeah, well, you know, listen, God had another plan for me and gave me a heart attack and a stroke. People are like, whoa, like where did that come from? And, you know, and it's like, oh yeah. And a month before that, I had a tornado hit my house and people are, you know, so I'm constantly hitting the hooks. And I think I'm just keeping it real. Like I'm just a guy who's on stage, who's okay to speak in front of everybody and, you know, and wants to just push my story out there and tell everybody what's going on. And I think also it's about keeping it real to the people. Too many people, when I watch them on stage, they want to talk about success. They want to talk about, oh, I did this and I built this, but they never want to bring up, I failed at this. I almost bankrupted here. I lost this. And I, you know, and I think that people want to engage with that. It humanizes what's going on, you know? And I think, so for me, I think it's just been like, let me get out there. And I'm so willing to tell my story, to tell it to people, because I'm hoping that people, it'll inspire. I'm hoping that it'll engage and it'll get people to say like, wow, if he can do it and he can keep going, I can keep going. If he can go through this and keep doing it, I can keep doing it. If he can build a business after, you know, almost losing everything, I can build a business. And that's what I want. That to me is more important than the people getting up and applauding at the end. I want people to walk away being like, I learned something from him. I want to talk to him and find out how I can do it and ask him more pinpointed questions. That is the most important thing that I hope that people get out of it. So that's what inspires me. And again, every time I walk up on that stage, I still say, wow, I can't believe that all of these people sitting here actually want to hear what I have to say.
And they do.
And it's so cool to hear such humility along with that. But I think that's also why people are attracted to listening to you, to wanting to know if you want to work with you. Same with David. David has such a colossal amount of success, and I rarely talk him up on this show, okay, if my job is really to bring him down, because I can try, and I keep failing, and it's fun for both of us, mostly me. But throughout all of that, as you know, David and I do, and a lot of the audience does, he speaks from such a place of humility, and he lives such a humble life in the way in which he just keeps his head down and keeps working and keeps giving. And I think that's really, really important. You know, none of us want to hear, you know, how perfect somebody is and how great they are. We want to understand like, okay, that's great, but how do we relate to that person? And so telling a story through your experiences and your truth just simply makes you more relatable. But I'll add to that, everybody on this call and anybody who's a successful speaker or successful performer has had to go through the many tribulations and trials to find a moment where you go, I just don't give a shit what people think of me. Mm. Like truly, I'm going to tell the story that I know has helped people, that I know can be impactful. And if it doesn't work for some people, that's fine. If you don't like it, that's okay. Mm. You know, I think we've all had to have those moments where we stopped trying to please everybody, because in doing so, you just don't please anybody. And that's been a big turning point for me, even on social media content and creating my own music and what I'm doing in shifting my business this past year, is I'm totally good with people not liking me. In fact, back to the original part of this conversation with the haters, it's not that I want more of it, but I know the more of it that happens, the more I'm on the right path and the more I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Because when there's no controversy, it means nobody actually gives a shit, good or bad. Right.
Or you're not creating enough of an impact that people are actually paying attention to you.
Absolutely. And if you want to make it, a, you know, just I think politically, just to prove a point, whichever side of the aisle you're on, you have 50 to 51% roughly of the country that is going to love you, and then 50 or 51% that is going to hate you. But if you don't choose to be true to something, you're going to have nobody that really cares. And I don't think business is that as black and white. I don't think the metrics are quite the same. But I do think that many of the same principles apply, right? If you don't stand for anything, you're not going to attract an audience that really understands what you stand for.
Well, you're talking about conformity, James, and that's the thing. Too many people want to conform to what they believe is important to other people, as opposed to being just true to yourself. Be true to yourself. Be, you know, look, I got to be the best I can for me every single day. Why? Because number one, I have hundreds, if not thousands of people that depend on me via families, via my employees and their families and so on and so forth. But also, I can't be good to anybody if I'm not good for myself first. I got to be true to myself. I have to have my faith. I have to believe in myself. And that's where it starts. And some people are going to say, well, you believing in yourself as much as you do, you know, that's you're conceited or you're self-indulgent. Listen, that may all very well be true. And I'm perfectly fine with that because that allows me the energy that I need every single day to do what are the things and make the decisions that I need to do that, again, that allows me to feed the mouths of 1,000+ people every single day. And so there has to be that level of it to some extent. And so, like, I'm not going to apologize for it, but be good for you before you can be good for anybody else. Because if you're not good for yourself, you're worthless. I mean, it's just in every capacity. So no, I agree. And you know, look, there are plenty of people that have come up to me and like, they don't like what, you know, maybe what I'm saying, or they're not understanding a piece of it. I respect your opinion. Thank you very much. You know, but there's definitely more people that like it because, again, I think when I'm going out there and being real and, you know, trying to get, trying to just give them perspective. I'm not trying to sell them anything. I'm not trying to convince them to do anything. It's look, here's my story. Take what you can from it. Hopefully it helps you and you can take something out of it. And the biggest thing that I hope that you take out of it is the willingness not to stick your head in the sand when you have heartache and you have problems, but to really pick yourself up and move yourself forward.
Which is a lesson for everybody everywhere, which is why Bobby Messmer should be on more stages as we, James and I, are traveling around. We're going to see more of Bobby. Bobby, thank you so much for joining Celebrity Entrepreneur. We appreciate your perspective and your talents. I'm telling you, I can sit here and talk to this guy all day. I do owe you a phone call. I know we're scheduled tomorrow, but I might call you tonight because I got a few things that I want to talk to him about.
So no problem. Call me anytime, Dave.
Yeah, I keep in touch with my friends. I just invite them on the shows. It works a lot better.
It's the only time that we have. We're all like in the grind all the time.
I know, right? Man. You know?
Exactly. I mean, James and I are talking about getting together to have a cup of coffee. I mean, we literally live 30 minutes from each other, you know? So,
no, as soon as we wrap this up, we'll put something on the calendar. So,
absolutely. Now, I appreciate you guys having me. Listen, anytime you want me, I love just talking in general about anything, not just about what I got going on and how I'm getting there. So I'm here for you guys anytime and look forward to it again.
You're amazing. We'll catch you on Boogie Nights 2 with me and Dirk Diggler, James Maslow. Thanks for joining us, Bobby.
Thanks. See you guys.
All right, Pimp the Dimp, the Ladies Himp. What's going on? What's your takeaway of the day?
No, you say these things as if I'm going to take them as anything but a compliment. Because
if I speak James Maslow, it is only in the best light.
I only hear in compliments, right?
I love you.
I really think being offended is a choice.
I love you. I would never tease someone that, like, I actually didn't think the highest level of respect and admiration and love for. I would never make fun of someone I didn't love.
Yeah.
So it's for me, it may not be the best form of endearment, but if I tease you for being a pimp, then know that I love you. And I'd offer my gigolo services if you'd be my pimp.
You'd probably be a fantastic gigolo. We'd probably need an enforcer not to get, you know, just somebody a little larger.
We'd have to pay by the second. We'd have to get paid by the second.
Wow. It's your return. But that's fine. My gigolo career aside, I just like Bobby's. You know, I met him the one time through you. I'm excited to get a coffee with him. His energy is contagious. And I'd say more importantly than that, I mean, he runs a gigantic business.
$4 billion.
Crazy. And yet he took the time, you know, when we could have just had a very brief introduction and conversation, he took the time to ask me what I was doing, get to know me, exchange information. He was just genuinely like, hey, anything I can do to help.
Yeah.
It's a similar way in which I see you work with just about everybody that you meet, where you're genuinely there and offer your help, offer your guidance, and you don't first ask, what can you do for me? It's actually quite the opposite. And I just want to just relay that rereading Think and Grow Rich, because that should be one of the ones we read once a year. And the very beginning of that book and then through the essence of the book is really what Bobby was talking about, which is believe in yourself. So much of it comes back to your belief that you can do it. One of my favorite sayings and something I think about a lot is whether you believe you can or you can't, you're right.
I love that.
I suppose there's a fine line between cockiness and arrogance and just believing yourself. But you know what? To Bobby's point, I'd rather be a little bit on that side of it and moving forward and trying and growing than living in fear, not doing anything.
Yeah, I think it's okay to be confident in your skills, confident in your knowledge, and confident in your desire, and still maintain a perspective that I don't know what I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think there's the fine line between the arrogance and the cockiness compared to someone that's confident in their skills, knowledge, and desire, and yet humble in understanding they have no control of circumstances or knowledge of most things. That although I am very confident in my subject matter, topic, and expertise, and its limited experience in its limited industry, career, job, I still, although I'm very confident in what I'm talking about pertaining to that, I'm also humble in the respect that I come from a position that I don't know what I don't know. There's the ignorant humility that comes with it. Real quick, because I got to get on. I licensed with a group the First and 10 TV series on HBO, and we're going to remake First and 10, which I'm going to have Bobby star in as an ex-football player, and I'll have James be a sports agent in a fur coat, or kind of like in Rudy. Remember the law school friend that wore that coat in the stands? John Favreau played him. You're looking John Favreau-ish from Rudy as well.
This is compliments.
My takeaway real quick, because I got to jump on that Zoom, is very simply appreciation. I think when we all three of us come from a place of appreciation, that we can appreciate our differences and also appreciate our opinions and appreciate other people's opinions, even if sometimes they're attacking and ignorant in their nature, we still can appreciate them. I appreciate both of you. Appreciate James Maslow. This is Celebrity Entrepreneur with James Maslow. Thank you, my friend.
All right. See you next week, buddy.
See you next week. See you, Bobby. All right, everyone, real quick, we're going to be in San Francisco, Chicago, in SoFi Stadium. Come meet us at the Masters, david@dmeltzer.com. Join our private networking group with one-on-one access to me. Text me if you want to be invited to shit. Don't text me if you don't want to be invited to shit. 949-298-2905. Thank you, everyone, so much. Be kind to your future self and do good deeds.